Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome back into Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Of course, live from the Auto Farm Studios. Plenty to get into today. Fun time of the year. Basketball's in full swing. It looks like the baseball season is going to continue. And also today represents the first day of local fall high school sports. For the time being, everything is good in the world of sports. And we will talk a little local on the show today. In fact, the local sports recap is coming your way in just a moment. But we'll put a large emphasis on the national scene. Last night, right here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz played their third restart game. They went toe-to-toe with the Lakers, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. Didn't end well for the Jazz. It was a great game. There were just times where that ugly Utah Jazz offense pops up. I mean, they cannot sustain long spans of productive offense. Donovan Mitchell was great last night. I thought Donovan took the ball hard to the basket, got to the free throw line. Was Donovan on the defensive end of the floor as well? I thought Donovan was just fine. Rudy Gobert was a disappointment in this game last night. Two-time defensive player of the year. Any Jazz fan will argue that he's the best defensive player in basketball. Should be the defensive player of the year once again this season. And he was flat-out torched last night by Anthony Davis. And it was almost as if Anthony Davis made it a point to go at Rudy Gobert. I believe he took 7 shots in the first 4 or 5 minutes of that game, if memory serves me right. But AD ends up going for 42 in this bowl game, scored 12 from the foul line. I mean, he took it to Gobert. And one of the biggest problems with the Jazz on the defensive end of the floor, can Rudy stay on the court for large minutes if the opposition runs an effective pick and roll? It's just a bad matchup. I mean, that's really all there is to it. The good news for the Jazz, you're not going to be playing the Lakers in the opening round. And when I look at the potential seeding, and we'll get into this next segment, that's the one team that Utah has to avoid. I would rather go toe-to-toe with the Clippers than go toe-to-toe with the Lakers. To me, it's a complete no-brainer. I still say that Houston is the team that I have the most questions about as far as the possibility, the potential first-round matchups. But as far as the Lakers are concerned, I mean, if they play 10 times, I believe the Lakers will win 9. I really feel like this is a poor, poor matchup. And again, I thought Utah played well for about 3 quarters. I didn't think the Lakers played great last night. Anthony Davis was good. LeBron James was, fair. It's a big win, however, for the Lakers because it's the first time in 10 years since they've clinched the number one spot in the Western Conference. They can lose the next 5 seeding games. It doesn't matter. The Lakers will be the one seed, which means we don't know who they're going to play. Could it be Portland? Could it be Memphis? Could it be New Orleans? Could it be San Antonio? The Lakers have no idea who they are going to play, but they now have the quote-unquote easiest route to get to the NBA championship. And I think at this point, it's almost a lock, barring an injury, that this Laker team makes it to the Western Conference Finals. Now for Utah, they don't have to worry about making the playoffs. They've already clinched that spot. But I do believe now with 5 games to go, with as much uncertainty as there is in the Western Conference, you got to start looking at matchups. Not a huge fan of the Oklahoma City matchup. Maybe Denver. Houston, again, it's the team I have the most questions about. And we'll talk more Utah Jazz basketball. That's coming up next segment here on the show. Today we've had day basketball, and we had one upset. One of the biggest upsets in the NBA in quite some time. The Milwaukee Bucks were 18-point favorites against the Brooklyn Nets. And there are some variables. Giannis Antetokounmpo only played about 16 minutes in this game, as did Chris Middleton. But the Bucks still lost to the Nets, 119-116. So Milwaukee has now lost to Houston and Brooklyn. Meanwhile, the Toronto Raptors continue to play lights-out basketball. I wasn't sold on Milwaukee. Wasn't sold. I don't trust them. I know what they're capable of doing, but I still don't trust them. Even though we saw very limited minutes from their starting lineup tonight, the Brooklyn Nets are a G League team. And Milwaukee's second unit should handle this Brooklyn squad. I mean, seriously, if you go through this Brooklyn roster, it's putrid. So, yes, this is a little bit worrisome for the Milwaukee Bucks. You just don't know how teams are going to handle the restart. Again, defensively, they have not been good. They give up a 40 spot in the first quarter to this Brooklyn squad. That was one of the finals from earlier today. Dallas did pick up an overtime, went over Sacramento, 114-110. Luka Doncic was really good. 34 points in this contest. His stat line all the way across, he just does Luka-type things. I don't know that we really give this guy all the credit that he deserves. I mean, get a load of the stat line. Scores 34 points, shoots exactly 50% from the field, 20 rebounds, 16 of which came on the defensive end, 12 assists, 2 blocks. He's pretty special. I mean, this kid can pretty much do it all. He helps Dallas to their 41st victory of the year as they top the Sacramento Kings, who are in the bubble, but really starting to see their playoff chances just fizzle with another loss today. Also in the NBA, again, having this day basketball, it's kind of fun to see. We have a game going on right now, Phoenix defeating the Clippers in the fourth quarter. The Clippers have got to watch it. They could slip down to number 3, possibly even number 4, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Still to come right now, Orlando getting set to tip things off with Indiana at 4:30. Boston at Miami, love that matchup. That game will be on TNT. And then the nightcap tonight, 7 o'clock, we get Houston and Portland. We'll take a look at Major League Baseball. We'll start with the scores, and then we'll go in to some of the stories. We had one game just come to a final just a few moments back. Minnesota topping the Pittsburgh Pirates 7-3. The Twins have been great so far. 9-2 now on the season, 7-1 at home. The Pirates, they continue to struggle. Joe Musgrove was really roughed up early on in this contest. The Pirates are now just 2-9. Joe Musgrove, 0-3 on the mound with a 6.7 ERA. Right now, the Indians and the Reds are getting set to battle it out. The Reds playing better baseball now at 5-5. The Indians are at 5-6. We get the Red Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays going at it at 4:40. Also coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, the Mets and the Washington Nationals. Juan Soto has been cleared. We're finally going to get to see this phenom play this season, although he will not be in the starting lineup tonight. Manager Davey Martinez said he's not going to rush him back. I believe he'll get an at-bat. I don't know how much Soto will play, if he plays at all. Expect him in the lineup tomorrow for the Nationals, who have struggled. They're just 3-4. Patrick Corbin will be on the mound for the Nationals. Steven Matz for the New York Mets. 5:10 tonight, we get the Blue Jays and the Braves. Boy, the Braves took a shot yesterday. Mike Soroka tearing his Achilles. Top pitcher in this rotation, and it looked very painful. And that is the last you'll see of Mike Soroka for this season. And I would be surprised if we see Soroka next season. That's a huge blow to this Braves team that's sitting 7-4 overall right now, 5-1 at home. 5:35 tonight, we get the Marlins, or what's left of them after a depleted roster is put together off the taxi squad due to the COVID-19 virus. 2-1 Marlins taking on the Baltimore Orioles. 5:30 start time there. 6:10 tonight, we get the White Sox and the Brewers. The Royals and the Cubs will battle it out at 6:15. We get the Giants and the Rockies. The Rockies are 7-2, and Jermaine Marquez will be on the mound tonight. 1-1 with a 1.5 ERA. He's been great for Colorado in the early going. 7:10 tonight, we have the Houston Astros going toe-to-toe with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Madison Bumgarner getting his second start in a D-back uniform. 7:10 tonight, we get the Rangers and the A's. The Dodgers will look to bounce back against the Padres. And then in the nightcap game, we get the Angels and the Mariners at 8 p.m. 3 games have been postponed. The Phillies and Yankees, Cardinals, Tigers, and also the Phillies and Marlins. So I guess you can consider it 3 games. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We have plenty to get into here on the show. The local sports recap is straight ahead. Plus, we'll talk NBA basketball. We'll talk about the Jazz. How alarming is it that this team is now 1-2 in the restart and expectations throughout the remainder of the year, including the 5 seeding games? That's coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
This is Derek Favors. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game. Harris, pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, right here on 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. We got to talk NBA basketball. Last night, the Utah Jazz, they were back here on KOAL, their third game of the NBA restart in Orlando. It did not end well for Utah, 116-108 win for the Lakers. I've said this a million times on the show, I'm going to go back to it. That is a horrible, horrible matchup for the Jazz, especially without Bojan Bogdanović. If those two teams play 10 times, the Lakers will win 9. That's just the way it works. I actually thought Utah did some decent things in this game. Again, it's just a bad matchup. We'll talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Jameson Welsh. He's our Drive Time Sports NBA analyst. Jameson, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, not a problem at all. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Let's start by talking about last night's game. The Jazz get the Lakers, and to me, it's a good gauge to see where the Jazz are at as we get down to the final 5-4-5 seeding games. It's a good gauge for this squad. And I really thought the Jazz did some things very well early on. For instance, Rudy Gobert had a little bit of success against Anthony Davis in about the first 5 minutes of the game. One of the aspects that I thought was extremely interesting, the Lakers made it a point to go at Rudy Gobert. Anthony Davis was extremely aggressive early on in this contest, and despite the fact that Gobert had some early success, Davis still shoots about 50% from the field. He finishes with 42 points, 12 boards, and a block to go along with the stat line. He's just a different cat in comparison to Rudy Gobert, and it's part of the reason why this is an awful matchup for this Jazz squad.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where matchup styles make fights, and the Jazz are in a situation where they don't have enough firepower or the right roster to really deal with the Lakers. I mean, that's one of those things where, I mean, they might get swept if they play in the series. That's just how it goes. But the Jazz have a weird roster. I mean, one of the things that people don't talk about enough is Mike Conley was thought to be the final piece of the puzzle to get the Jazz over the top or put them in position to take a 10. And that has not happened. Like, they really needed Mike Conley to be an all-star type guy or be at that kind of level, and that is nowhere near. And that's been a big issue.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about Mike Conley for a moment. Tell me if I'm off here on my assessment. When Mike Conley was with the Memphis Grizzlies, they were a fun story. They took a couple of teams to the brink. They may sneak up and win a series from time to time. They were a fun team. They give Mike Conley this massive, massive deal. If I'm not mistaken, at the time, it was the second biggest deal in NBA history, if memory serves me right. And no one really gave it a second thought because the Grizzlies were the Grizzlies. We knew what to expect from this quote-unquote blue-collar team, right? Well, then a squad who has had some success, similar success to Memphis, acquires Mike Conley. And the expectations mixed with the dollar amount that he uses against the cap hits, and we're seeing what Mike Conley is. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes and no. I mean, so here's the thing. When it comes to the cap and everything like that, everything is relative to your situation. So if you're trying to contend, I don't think you should worry about the cap so much. But, if you're a team that's rebuilding, you should consider I don't want to pay luxury tax, et cetera, et cetera. If you're trying to win and you're trying to get to the next level, you got to go for it. In this NBA, we see how the league changes pretty much every year. Like, the league is different every year. Every year is different. Like, the way the game is played, the things that are trendy, all that stuff. So, to me, it's like, I get where people come from, but on like a 1 or 2 year situation, I think you always go for it. So I don't think of the cap and the value of contracts that are short-term and that great of a deal.
Again, Jameson Welsh, our guest right now, as we talk about the NBA. Last night, the Utah Jazz dipping to 1-2 in the restart. And as far as the seeding goes, and we'll get into that in just a moment, I really don't worry about it as much for the Jazz. We now know the Lakers are the number one seed in the Western Conference. That's the important aspect for me, Jameson. I said this on the show yesterday. If you're number one, you're fine because you get 8 in the first round. You're going to get 4 or 5 in the second. Outside of that, two, three, six, seven. To me, it's almost irrelevant because you're going to be going toe-to-toe against those same four opponents, and there's no home court advantage. So once you get past the one seed, I really don't care much about the seeding. That's what I would try. That's what I would try to push to Jazz fans, I guess, to somewhat comfort them if they're a little bit blue after last night or with the 1-2 start.
The Jazz are, it's not matches they want to avoid. They're going to lose to either LA team, but they'd probably be better off facing the Clippers and the Lakers if they had to make a choice. Now, there's a team that they may be able to beat, which is probably Denver, because Denver has a lot of injuries, and we don't know what their roster is going to be like. So that's a team that, Denver just has so much in flux. Like, we just don't know what their situation is and whatnot. So Denver's a team they can match up against well. They can do some things against. I wouldn't favor them in a series with, but that's a team that they can play against. I think OKC is a better team overall. I also think Houston's a better team. So it really just comes down to who they think is their best matchup and go from there. Now, when the Jazz are playing really good defense and their defense creates offense, I think they're in good shape. However, it's tough in the playoffs because in the playoffs, your biggest weaknesses get magnified. And I just personally don't know how Rudy Gobert can stay on the court versus a team that runs pick and roll very well. That I don't know. So we're going to see. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see the situation. I'm very curious how the seedings do match up because I'm a believer that somebody out that 3-7, lane is going to upset somebody. I don't know who. Don't know how, but there's going to be upset somewhere on that side of the bracket.
Well, and as far as the 3-7, we had a game yesterday where the Nuggets had a great comeback, topped the Oklahoma City Thunder late in that contest going into overtime. That's important because Denver's now just a game and a half back of the Clippers, right? And so we talk 3-7. It's not that it's a foregone conclusion that the Clippers are going to be number two, and that changes things drastically. If you go from 2-3, to me, it is a big difference because, again, 4, 5, and 6, Jameson, it's hard to predict right now because these are squads that are going up against each other, and literally a game is separating them. So these seeding games are different than anything that we've seen, these close races. It's hard to predict. 2-3 is an important aspect, though, in my mind, based on the fact that you may very easily draw Dallas compared to getting Houston. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possible.
Yeah, if I'm the Clippers, I would not want to face Houston. They are a very unique squad. They're a squad that can knock you out because of the style they play. Now, they're also a squad where if they got swept, it wouldn't surprise anyone either. But, I would try to avoid Houston in the first round. But also, there's so many things going on. I had the pleasure of speaking with multiple people around the league over the last week or so. And they're all saying that the one good thing about the bubble is that these guys are more focused than ever before because you can't go to clubs. You got to stay in. You got to go to sleep at a certain time. So it's not like you're out going to clubs and partying. You're literally focused day in, day out. So we're going to see some really good basketball here. But the seedings are definitely going to matter. And once they break down, I personally believe if there's a side of the bracket that has, the OKC, Dallas, or Utah, if any of those teams are on the same side of the bracket, whoever the number one or whoever the top two seeds are, whether it's Lakers' side of the bracket or Clippers' side of the bracket, whoever has more of those teams on the side of it has an easy way because those teams, you basically have a free pass to the conference finals. As good as those teams have been this season, they're just a few steps below what the other teams are, and that's just kind of what it is.
Let's move on and talk about another team of the Western Conference that, they have a little bit of ground to make up, but they finally logged a victory. That was the New Orleans Pelicans. Last night was monumental for this team. This was a squad that looked just dead in the water after their second game. They were horrible against the Clippers. Last night, they pick up a win against the Grizzlies. Memphis had an opportunity to not necessarily deliver a knockout punch, but I think it would have been as close as possible to knocking out a team in this bubble had New Orleans lost that game last night. We saw Zion late. I don't know if that was necessarily the factor. I think 8 to 9, 10, 11, if you look at the Western Conference, these teams are very close-knit with one another. But it was nice to see Zion get some minutes late, New Orleans finally picking up a win in the bubble.
Yeah, the problem with the Pelicans is this. They have some really good talent, as we know, following the Lakers for a long time. They have three guys that are really skilled basketball players. However, the biggest issue here is this. The biggest issue is Zion is going to have to either get in shape or they're going to have to use him differently, because Brandon Ingram is the best player on that team right now. Like, I understand Zion's potential. Drew Holiday is a very good player, but Brandon Ingram's their best player, and they need to go through him more. He's a guy that can score at will. He can score at any time, and they don't treat him as such. He goes long stretches without scoring the basketball, without even getting touches, and that's just not right. A guy that's averaging 24, 25 points a night, you go to that guy. I put it this way. The Suns have Devin Booker that averages right around, I believe, 27 a night. He's the offense. They go through him all the time. Like, the Pelicans go through stretches without utilizing Brandon Ingram and the advantages he has, and it's mind-boggling to me. But also, at the same time, there's a lot of different things going on with the Pelicans. It seems like there's some organizational stuff that we don't know about, because before he left the bubble, there was no issues or there was no words about him being out of shape or anything of that nature. There was nothing like that. Like, hey, all systems go, he's cool. He leaves the bubble for 4 to 5 days. Now he's severely out of shape. Something doesn't add up here. I hope we get to the bottom of it, but a lot doesn't add up here in my eyes.
Let's move on to the Eastern Conference. We'll talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. It's really hard to gauge where this team is at. I mean, Giannis only plays 16 minutes today in a loss to the Brooklyn Nets. Chris Middleton only plays 16 minutes in a loss today. Eric Bledsoe plays 18. So there are variables. You can't just look at the score or pick up a box score and say, oh my goodness, what happened here? There are variables to consider. Yet, with that same token, there's a lot of guys on this team that are receiving time that I don't believe are going to receive time once we get to the playoffs. Still, Jameson, part of the worry for the Bucks, it is what they are doing defensively. Even with Giannis only playing 16 and Middleton not playing sufficient minutes and the starting five really only being out for about 20 minutes in this contest, they gave up a 40 spot to Brooklyn in the first quarter. That worries me a little bit. You go back to a loss against the Houston Rockets. There were three quarters in that contest where they gave up 30-plus to the Rockets. These are things that you can't ignore, regardless of the amount of time that Giannis is out on the court. This is the only concern I really have with this Milwaukee Buck team, that they have a problem defending the opposition.
I mean, they're in the bubble. You know, they were, I believe, the eighth spot out east. They're in the bubble. However, they have no business being there. None. Like, and I'm glad Jamal Crawford played today. I know he got hurt. He banged up his hamstring. Hopefully he's fine going forward. But that's not a, you know, that's a damn near G League team. So for the Bucks to struggle against them and to not really put them away or take them seriously is a bit concerning. However, I'd rather take the field out east over Milwaukee. I really would. I just don't trust the Bucks. Like, there's just not enough guys on that roster that I really truly trust. When I look at everything, when I look at all the players on the roster, when I look at all the situations, man, I just don't trust guys like a Eric Bledsoe. I like Chris Middleton's game, but if he's my number one playmaker on the wing, I have my concerns. I have my doubts.
Yeah, especially when I look at a team like the Raptors, who look very good defensively, right? And that's one of the reasons why I've been in love with this Raptor team for most of the season. I love what they can do on the defensive end of the ball. The fact is, they held LeBron James and Anthony Davis to under 100 points. They topped the Miami Heat, a team that could give some teams some fits. When I look at these two squads, and you talk about this trust factor, I don't know if it's Nick Nurse on the sidelines. I don't know what it is. But Jameson, I trust Toronto a whole hell of a lot more than I trust Milwaukee. I just do.
So the issue I have with Toronto is this. Who is the guy that's going to take big shots for them? Who's going to be the go-to guy? They have a lot of really good players, but they don't have that one guy that can consistently make plays. I like Siakam, but he's not a guy I trust in an ISO set, or a guy I would trust with the game on the line, or if I need to a guy to carry me for 4 minutes, I don't think he's that guy. Kyle Lowry, I don't want him being the guy either. So they have some doubts and concerns, but as a team, they play very hard. So in the regular season, it makes it look like, oh, they want it more than you. But in the playoffs, everyone plays hard. So you don't have that same advantage in the playoffs. So I'm going to be very curious to see who's going to be their go-to guy. Is it going to be VanVleet? You know, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen, because last year they had Kawhi to take over and take all those pressure moments away from everyone else. Who is that guy this year? That's their biggest question. But I take the field. I'd take Toronto, Miami, Boston, without Kevin being 100%, I don't know. But I'd rather take the field than the Bucks in the out east.
We'll end with this. Let's talk about the Lakers. Last night, they clinched the number one seed in the Western Conference. The last time the Lakers clinched the one seed in the Western Conference, I believe it was 2010, if I'm not mistaken, when the Lakers won an NBA championship. They get the best of the Boston Celtics. It just so happens that the first time Kobe won a championship without Shaq, it was against Dwight Howard in Orlando. The Lakers are back in Orlando. Everything seems to be aligning. Jameson, are they your odds-on favorite now that we've seen three games in the bubble?
I mean, I'll put it this way. First and foremost, the Western Conference Championship trophy at the end of the Western Conference Finals should be named after a Laker or the Lakers, first and foremost, because they've won it so many times. Like, they've come out the conference so many times since the league has been an inception. However, this team, this year, they have a very unique bunch this year. They have a very, very unique team. They're carried by two guys. And they have a lot of role players that you really don't know what you're going to get from game to game. There's not that consistent third guy. You know what I mean? There's not that third guy that you know you're getting. You know what I mean? You know, hey, that guy's getting you 17 tonight.
Yep.
No, one night could be Waiters. Next night could be Kuzma. You don't know. However, the one thing that I like their chances over most is that their defense can really get very stifling for 5 to 7 minutes at a time, and that, to me, is where championships are won, because scoring is scoring. You're not going to be able to shut down a team the whole game. It doesn't happen anymore. The rules changes just avoid that. However, when you look at it like this, Jordan, you stop teams, make things difficult on teams in spurts. So if you can hold somebody to under 10 points for a 7-minute stretch, you're in good shape. And that's the thing they did last night. I think they shut Utah down for like 5 minutes of game time. And when you do that, you're going to win games. I mean, that's just how it goes. And that's their biggest strength, is their defense. And when they have Anthony Davis at the five, they have some lineups that are just unbeatable.
Jameson Welsh, again, our NBA analyst. Jameson, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
ESPN 1100, also basketballnews.com, also KDON 720 out here in Vegas, and Fox Sports 1340. Then ESPN 1480 as well.
Jameson, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time joining us on a Tuesday instead of the typical Monday. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Again, we are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
Salud.
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 Time for one of my favorite segments here on Drive Time Sports. It's Cheers, brought to you by Handy Mart and Helper. Every week we raise our glass, we say cheers to something, someone, or some team in sports. And today I'm going to raise my glass to BYU football. Yes, BYU football, and I'll tell you why. Fall camp started today. There's no schedule. There's no opener. There's no plans. They have literally no idea if this squad is going to get to play football, yet the student-athletes are hitting fall camp today as if there's going to be a season. And to me, I think that speaks volumes. I think it speaks volumes, and it goes back to a brief conversation that we had on the show yesterday about the student-athletes in the Pac-12 basically threatening the conference to give in to their demands or they are going to walk. And I said this on the show yesterday. There's a group of kids in Provo that would be more than happy to fill in for any team in the Pac-12. There's a group of kids in Provo that may be more than happy to transfer if they could play college football right now, because BYU has no idea if they are going to get a season. Anytime we've talked about BYU over the last couple of weeks, we've had to bring up Notre Dame. Notre Dame, they were welcomed into the ACC. It was no surprise. The question was, what would happen with BYU? Maybe the Big 12. Maybe. Because, again, the Big 12 only has 10 teams. I know that sounds ludicrous, right? You could use one more squad. You could. That way you could fulfill a 10-team schedule. News is leaking that the Big 12 will not invite BYU. Instead, they are going to roll with a 9-game conference schedule and allow every team to play a plus one. Now, that does not mean that BYU could be left out of the equation, because if each team plays a plus one, maybe the Cougars could pick up a couple of other games. I mean, right now, they still have Utah State, Boise State, San Diego State, Northern Illinois, and Houston on the schedule. So maybe, just maybe, they could come to an agreement with a few squads in the Big 12. I don't know. Maybe that's a pipe dream. But the bottom line is BYU was not invited as a Big 12 substitute. And really, I feel bad for BYU. And I know here in the state of Utah, you have two factions of people, right? You're a Ute fan or you're a Cougar fan. And I've said multiple times here on the show, I'm not anti-BYU, I'm not anti-Utah. I'm not. I can sit on the fence with it. BYU's football program deserves better. Everything that the college has put into the program, it deserves better. Now, you hope that the Group of Five opponents remain on the schedule, because the Power Five leagues have decided conference-only schedule, and if the Group of Five does that, BYU is really, really in trouble. I don't think the Group of Five is going to do that. Here's the idea for BYU, and I believe this is what they are going to be forced to do. They're going to have to line up with the other independents: New Mexico State, UMass, UConn, Army, and Liberty. Like I said, my hope is that the Big 12 will offer a game or two to BYU. Some of the squads that are looking for that plus one will offer a game to BYU here or there. Because, again, they're a legitimate opponent. And, again, when I talk about the other independents, because we cannot consider Notre Dame independent now, at least not for this year, we can't consider that. New Mexico State, UMass, UConn, Army, Liberty. I mean, really, is BYU's football program in the same category as those schools I just mentioned? No. No, they're heads and tails above them, right? And Utah fans may get a kick out of this. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they get a kick out of this, and that's fine. It's part of the rivalry. I totally understand it. But also, if you look at things realistically, you have to agree with me that that football program is a step above the ones that I just listed, right? There are Power 5 conference squads that have a full schedule, and BYU doesn't. And I kind of feel for these kids. I feel for these kids that are at fall camp today, working as if there is going to be a season, and we have no idea if there's going to be one. And yet, dare I use the word spoiled, we have spoiled student athletes in other conferences threatened to boycott if a list of demands are not met. Because in my mind, these demands are coming out because of the current political climate and the worldwide pandemic. These student athletes are trying to get theirs. They're using the current situation that we are in to benefit themselves. Meanwhile, you have this group at BYU participating today as if a season is going to go on, and they don't have any idea what their schedule is going to look like. I raise my glass to BYU football. Today's cheer segment brought to you by Handy Martin Helper, one of my favorite segments. We do it every Tuesday right here on Drive Time Sports. Head on down to the Handy Martin Helper. We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Take that for data.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. We just had a thriller in the NBA. Devin Booker lifts the Phoenix Suns to a 117-115 win over the Los Angeles Clippers. I'll bring in Travis Anderson. Travis, this play for Booker, I kid you not, it is Kobe Bryant-esque, this game winner. I challenge everyone to watch this highlight. Tie ball game. Booker goes to the left corner of the paint. Fakes right. Shakes Kawhi. Fades away. Gets the shot off over the top of Paul George, and he cans it at the buzzer. That's an incredible shot.
Beautiful. The footwork on it gets Kawhi out of position. Paul George late rotating over. Paul George fouls him as well because he lands on top of him. And Devin Booker at the buzzer with just one of the best shots in the bubble so far.
No question. I mean, you couldn't play better defense. You can't fault Kawhi. You can't fault Paul George. It's good defense, incredible offense. Booker finishes with 35 points. He shoots 13 of 25 from the field. And this is interesting. This makes things very interesting as far as that play-in game of the Western Conference. Now, the East, we're not going to get it. Brooklyn is somehow going to get into the playoffs, and Milwaukee is going to stomp them out. Even though Milwaukee lost today, I don't care. They're going to just stomp this Brooklyn Nets team out. But the Western Conference, that 8-9 play-in matchup, we're going to get it because right now Memphis is only two games up on Portland, and there is breaking news that Jaren Jackson Jr. has torn his meniscus and he will miss the remainder of the year for the Grizzlies. And that opens things up. Portland is at 30-38. So they are within striking distance to get to the play-in game. Remember, you got to be within four games of the eighth seed. San Antonio is a full game back of Portland. New Orleans, a half game back of San Antonio. And Phoenix, they're now a full game back of Portland as well. The Western Conference 8-9 matchup is going to be fascinating basketball down the stretch. And I don't want to make this a bigger deal than what it needs to be, because ultimately whoever plays the Lakers, I believe it's a 5-6 games at the absolute most, depending on how the Lakers want to approach it. But I'll tell you, that 8 seed, even though Portland's at 30-38, Dame Lillard's one of the best players in the game right now. The Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker, he's one of the most unique scorers in the game. New Orleans did not look bad last night. I think this race is going to be fascinating down the stretch.
Yeah, Portland has a tough schedule. Houston, tonight. And then they got Thursday, they got Denver. They got the Clippers on Saturday. Philly, Dallas, and they close with Brooklyn. That's not an easy stretch of games for Portland, which they gave one away against the Celtics the other night, which, you know, hurt them a little bit. But I think it's not going to be Portland. I kind of like Phoenix, New Orleans, one of those two.
Yeah, looking at the final stretch for Phoenix. Up next for the Suns, they get Indiana. That'll be on Thursday. Early start time there. Then they get Miami, Oklahoma City, Philly, and Dallas. They're all winnable games. Every one of those games are winnable. San Antonio is a team that I think you probably have to pay attention to. The fact that Greg Popovich, one of the best coaches in the game, had 4 months to prepare his team, I think that does matter. New Orleans, in my mind, is the best all-around team. It just all depends on if Alvin Gentry can get things going. And as Jameson pointed out earlier in the show, Zion Williamson's not in great shape, and that matters. So when I look at the final, let's say, five teams.
New Orleans got a favorable schedule, too.
But we can't rule out Sacramento either. They're still playing, and Sacramento is a game back of Portland, or two games back in the win column, one back in the loss column. So don't count out Sacramento yet either. I know they've lost their last two games, but don't count them out. If we're looking at the best player between Memphis, Portland, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Phoenix, and even Sacramento, I don't believe there's any question Dame Lillard is the best player out of that bunch, bar none.
Yes.
We can agree on that.
Agreed.
Best team? I have to say it's New Orleans, but this Suns team is fun. The Suns team is a fun, entertaining team. They beat Dallas by two, 170-115. They beat the Clippers, 117-115. What are the odds of that? But when you look at this Phoenix Suns team, it goes beyond Devin Booker. They're a fun team to watch, and nobody really talks about them because right now everything is based around Zion in New Orleans, and Brandon Ingram is probably the second or third best player out of those group of teams. He's probably second or third. I'd probably put him right there with Devin Booker. But DeAndre Ayton today was good. He had 19 points in this game, gave the Clippers some fits who don't have Montrezl Harrell. Ricky Rubio. Jazz fans are familiar with him. He was good today. He scored 18 points in this contest, and you have Devin Booker. This is a fun team. In fact, I like this Suns team. I really do.
I like Phoenix, too. They get up and down the floor. They can score the ball. They're scrappy defensively. I really enjoy watching Phoenix play just because I don't know what I'm going to get out of Devin Booker, and the guy's so good that what he did today was awesome, and we've seen what he did, what was it, last year when he put up 70-plus?
Yeah. People don't realize how good Devin Booker is, and I think that's because he plays for the Phoenix Suns. They haven't been very good. But when you're playing in this bubble, this is an opportunity to focus on players or teams like this. Right? I think you can highlight players. And it's unfortunate that the NBA has developed their entire marketing scheme around Zion Williamson. I firmly believe the reason why the league put the, if you're within four games of the eighth seed, we have a play-in game.
You know why.
They put that in there so they could try to get New Orleans the postseason. And so I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I hope it's not New Orleans that gets the nine spot, because they're not going to catch Memphis. Even though that Jaren Jackson Jr. isn't playing, they're not going to catch Memphis. there's not enough games left. I believe Memphis is, what, 3 up, if I'm not mistaken, on Portland right now as we speak. And so Memphis is going to get in. The Grizzlies right now, they're 2 up on Portland, 3 up on the Spurs in the win column. So I think Memphis gets into that play-in game, but it's the next team up. And I'll tell you, Zion, New Orleans, Brandon Ingram, they're going to have their time. I think I would rather watch Phoenix or Dame Lillard in that matchup. Really, I would.
No, I'm with you. I don't want New Orleans just because they've catered to the Pelicans.
They
in this
have.
Bubble.
They have.
They set everything up around New Orleans to try to push them into that playoff spot, or at least attempt to get into that, you know, ninth spot to play for a playoff spot. I don't want New Orleans there, and I'm with you. I want to see Phoenix or, you know, Portland go at it with Memphis.
Dame Lillard is fascinating to watch. One of the best players.
CJ McCollum's
in the game.
Great too.
CJ McCollum's he's great. Right, and I think that Portland could give the Lakers some fits.
They can. Nurkic is very good. They got the size there. Portland and the Lakers, that might be a 6-7 game series in the bubble.
Yeah, nonetheless, Devin Booker, he had the shot of the bubble. Like I said, go check it out. I mean, shakes away from Kawhi, hits the shot over the top of Paul George. You're talking about two of the best on-ball defenders in the game. Devin Booker, he has game. He has a lot of it. Out of time on the show today. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. Looking forward to tomorrow's show. We'll talk some Major League Baseball. We'll talk about the struggles of the Houston Astros and individual players. Altuve batting .158 after the cheating scandal. That's going to be on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.